I started getting really good at discovering when I stopped caring about making a sale. Okay, yes, our job is to generate revenue, but there was one evening.
So how should I approach an outbound meeting compared to an inbound meeting?
What is an SDA meeting?
I think getting right to it, like, and just kind of acknowledging where you're calling from and getting right into the meat of it really works for probably a lot of us.
Prospects don't care what you are, they care what you do and how you can help.
And then, like, what we do, it's actually what you're saying there, Charles, is who we help and how we help them. So it's
Yeah.
not even we. You say, yeah, our teams, but it's really the meat of the sentence is focused on the impact that you're providing or the problem that you're solving.
All right, y'all, welcome back to the Millennial Sales Podcast. Your host, Tommy Tahoe Alamo. Welcome to the show. Before we get into the goods today, I want to announce that this podcast is brought to you by the Arise Sales Retreat. This is actually something that I'm doing with my two friends, Alex Kremer and Clara Johnson, who they both used to run sales teams over at Outreach, as well as other companies, and now they're at Catalyst. And what is this retreat? It's a 3-day in-person retreat that we're doing in Austin, Texas in July. It's focusing on three things: helping people to master the art of sales. So we'll be talking about prospecting, negotiation, closing, discovery, things like that. We're going to work on the inner game. So getting your mind right, working on your finding your why. How do you find fulfillment in sales? Some of these deeper questions, as well as building community and just having a good old-fashioned time, man. We're going to be doing hikes and yoga and group dinners and just a lot of fun activities as well. So if you want to learn more, either check out my LinkedIn or go to alluvience.co/arise and learn more. So for today's episode, it's going to be a little bit of a unique episode in that actually pulled station that we had as part of the Revenue Lab community calls. Every week we have a guest come in and do a live Q&A with the community. And a couple weeks ago, we had Charles Mulbauer, and Charles is amazing. He's one of the best people that are talking about discovery. We did an episode a while ago where he talked about his path from finance and accounting and getting into sales. And we have a good old fashioned like Q&A back and forth with Charles asking about discovery. We do some role plays. So if you feel like, I think everyone can do better discovery, but if you are feeling like that's slacking in your game right now, this would be a good episode to check out. So without further ado, let's get straight into my conversation, or the whole community's conversation, with Charles.
So Charles is here. He's coming here from New York City. I've known Charles for a few years now, and he came on my podcast a while back, and I really love Charles's first. One of the reasons I really connected with Charles is he has a unique background getting into tech sales. I believe he was an accountant or working at like a big four company. You can correct anywhere where I lie.
You're correct.
Okay. And then got into sales, loved it, and really like dove headfirst into the discovery process of sales. That's really what he's known for. He's been on 30 Minutes to Presidents Club. He's run, sales teams, sales enablement at multiple companies, coaches people about discovery, and just landed a new job at a company called AlphaSense that I just saw a couple days ago that you landed there. So I think for anyone that's interested, you can ask Charles anything, but if you're interested in like the come up of a sales career, especially if you have a unique background into tech sales, definitely if you have anything about discovery, I'll let Charles speak to if there's anything else that he thinks is like super top of mind. But Charles, fill in the gaps, where'd I miss? And of course, just thank you for joining us.
Tom, thank you very, very much. That was very, very unexpected. No gaps to fill. As Tom mentioned, I pretty much just talk about discovery all day until people get sick of it, which is a good thing. And on the side, I coach reps outside of work, coaching a whole team in Australia right now just on discovery. And people, ask me any question they feel like asking me. I'm pretty direct about helping people and making people better. So that's pretty much what I'm doing. And as Tom mentioned, I just joined AlphaSense to help the organization do the same thing, among other things. So it's great to be here among really awesome sales folks. So thank you. That's all I got.
So We always just kind of open this up. I guess I'll just ask the first question and then we'll just get the momentum going. I don't even know if I know this, Charles, but why? I could guess as to like why you're so focused on discovery, because it impacts a lot of things in sales. But was there a moment in your career, your sales career, where you're like, man, I just want to be like the best at discovery? It's just such a specific thing. And not that not a ton of people talk about it all the time on LinkedIn compared to like prospecting.
Yeah, that's true. So part of me, because some of the things about my, that I might say, I'm going to say very plainly. I started getting really good at discovering when I stopped caring about making a sale. Okay, yes, our job is to generate revenue and it's important to do our job and to do it well. I get all that. There was one evening within my, when I first started selling, where I said to myself, like, I'm not selling anything. I've been at this job 6 or 7 months, my first sales gig. Not selling anything. And I think the reason why I'm not selling anything is because I don't feel like I'm being myself. I'm trying to be like other people, or I'm putting the onus. I was putting a lot of the onus and the pressure upon me to try to convince other people that they should work with us. And so I couldn't really go any lower than I was. And so the next morning I just hop on the phone and I was very, very cool, calm and collected. And because I didn't care nearly as much about what people thought of me. Of course, I wasn't a mean person on the phone, but because I cared a lot less about how I came across. Of course, I was professional, but because I cared a lot less whether or not they worked with us, it got me to a place where I would ask the prospect any question I felt like asking, and they would answer it very, very honestly. And only then did my sales start to skyrocket. So that's what happened to me. And then I started really to focus mainly on my discovery skills. Of course, it's not just skills, it's a mindset also. And it's hard not to care. I will recommend something to everybody. There's a book called Question Based Selling that I talk a lot about. In the preface to that book is very, you can look at it online actually. The preface to Question Based Selling, it's called The Best Sales Experience I Hope You Never Have. You can look for it on Google, The Best Sales Experience I Hope You Never Have. That story is an unbelievable story by the author, where his wife unfortunately was diagnosed with cancer. Thank God everything turned out to be okay. But once she was diagnosed, he like just cut through the fluff on, he was still working. He still had to go to work and he was a sales professional. He just like cut through the fluff and just told the prospect if they weren't a fit, he's like, listen, we can't help you. So, and he was just direct with how he communicated and how he asked questions, and he became even more successful. And thankfully the story ended well for both of them. But that's something you should definitely read. So those are some things that I thought about that allowed me to focus heavily on discovery. And as Tom mentioned, as I mentioned, that's all I talk about. And you guys are welcome to ask me any question you want.
Fire away.
I can start. So you mentioned you're teaching a bunch of Australians right now. Everything they say sounds like a question. So how are you working in that environment?
How am I working in that environment? They're very pleasant. I'm hearing something in the background. I hear something in the background. Sorry. I think that's coming from Kate. Okay, no problem. So the folks that I'm working with in Australia, the main thing they had an issue with, actually not an issue with, but the main thing they wanted to focus on was how to do a better job asking their first problem question. So for those of you that, even if you don't follow me, I talk a lot about asking open-ended questions with the words "to what extent," right? So they wanted to talk about better ways they can raise issues with their prospects. It's also a big thing in question-based selling. Instead of asking our prospects what challenges they feel they have, we bring up the challenges ourselves and tell our prospect, by the way, Andrew, right, these are the main three things that we're finding, or these are the things that we've uncovered, or that our clients have told us are things that they're concerned about, or focused on, or anxious about, or worried about. And I was curious, Andrew, to what extent you and the team have thought about these things internally, right? So something like that really begins to drive a discovery conversation. You'll see online from trainers and coaches, so ask this question, ask question. all of them are great and all of them are important. And it's none of that can happen without driving the conversation with your prospect and raising the issues for them so that they know what you're talking about, you're credible, and it begins, lets you prime the pump. So those are some of the things I'm working with the team in Australia right now. Yeah.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah. You're based in Australia, Andrew, or no?
I'm in LA, but
you're in LA. Okay.
I haven't lived in Australia for 11 years now, but
okay.
I'm sure the market is ripe for innovation.
Yeah, it is ripe. And actually, I'm working with a nice Australian AE at HubSpot. And one of the things I find that, to the extent that you guys do this or don't do this already, but it's important for us to not have pressure and put pressure on ourselves to sell or to feel like we have to ask all the questions. So if I feel like I'm under pressure to do something and say, Joel, you're my prospect, I'll say, Joel, appreciate you sharing that. Would it be okay if I maybe ask two or three pretty direct questions based on what you just said so I can have a full understanding as to what we can help you with and what we can't help you with? Let's say, well, Joel will say yes, because nobody says no to that, or very few people say no to that, I should say. And then that allows me, the AE, to feel very comfortable asking very direct questions, especially since Joel gave me permission to do so. I care a lot less. This is where the not caring comes from. I care a lot less about how it comes across because I've already given him fair warning. And I will also use a humbling disclaimer. So if I feel awkward asking Michelle a question and I feel it's going to be weird, I say, Michelle, I appreciate you sharing that. I recognize that the question that I'm thinking about might be a little bit direct or slightly out of bounds. So I hope that's okay. But you mentioned this and I was wondering if, right. So I do that also to make me feel comfortable. So a lot of the skills that make discovery conversation really, really solid is you not caring. How do you not care? By sharing your insecurities with the prospect, asking for permission, telling them you might feel a little awkward asking something. And as long as you're breaking down those barriers, I care a lot less about how I come across. And that can result in me asking very direct questions to the prospect while saving time, which is of course the number one thing we ultimately want to do. So those are some things that I help out AEs while we're reviewing calls on the side.
Maybe,
yeah, of course. Anybody else have any direct questions for me? See, what's cool about this, right, is I don't enjoy talking for a long time, but I will if nobody else will. One of the cool things about this format is, right, you don't care about what question you ask me, right? You can ask me whatever question you want because you're not a threat to me in this environment, right? You're not a threat to me because you don't have an agenda. Quote unquote, I don't have an agenda here. So when you don't have an agenda with the other party, then you get to ask any question you want. And how do you communicate to the other party that you do not have an agenda? By constantly communicating to them, not necessarily said in this way, but constantly communicating to your prospect, I don't care if you don't want to work with us, I really don't. But the only way you are going to make that determination, whether you do or whether you do not, is if you get a full sense around what we do, and I get the freedom to ask you any question I want to ask because we're not a fit for everybody either, and that's okay. And you want to be efficient with your time, I want to be efficient with my time. As long as that communication is continuously coming across, then you both have no agenda. Aside from, can we help you? Are you interested? Are we a fit? Are we not a fit? Is this part of your priority? If it's not, no. It won't be the first time you said no. It won't be the last time I hear a no also. That's just how the world works. And so once you come across, that allows you to be disarming also, and then allows you to be a lot more comfortable on the calls, and the prospects feel it, they see it, and they'll be more straightforward with you, whether they want to move forward with you or not.
Hey, Charles. My name is Bruce.
Hey, Bruce. Templeton.
I was in enterprise sales for many years, I mentioned that to a few people here, sold probably a couple $100 million worth of hardware, software, and services throughout my career. and then founded a company, a software company doing OpenStack clouds. And, you know, there we were pretty desperate to get people to talk with us. I've also helped quite a few startups with their initial go-to-market strategy and just trying to get those first few meetings, see if you can push it through the POC and get some orders. And the other one is just met a lot of people over the years. And, you know, just even angel investors in my last company, just, I call it serendipity. We get a lot of that. I'm in Silicon Valley, where you meet somebody and lo and behold, you know, when you need that money, I can't tell you how many times I needed 50 grand and I just can't believe how I found it. But a lot of times it was serendipity through people I'd met. And so what I'm getting at is that I agree with you, you can't care. You know, there's an old saying in war is that you can't fight until you think you're already dead. There's a, I forgot what movie it was on Okinawa. The guy said, how do you do it? You know, it's just, I just realize I'm dead. I can fight now. But the other one is in teaching salespeople, I've often said, you know, don't even think about it, about selling. Think about it as discovery. You know, you're out there trying to learn. And I can tell you when you're in a startup mode, you're desperate. I'll buy somebody lunch if they'll just talk to me and give me some feedback. But it's all about discovery. It's, and especially if you're in a fast growing, changing market, or if you're a new company that's trying to test the market and figure out where you stand, that feedback is almost more, I don't know if you've read Steve Blank's book from years ago, Four Steps to Epiphany, but mm-hmm. he talks about that, that in your product development early on, don't sit there in an ivory tower making your product for the world. Get out there and talk to people and then build what they want.
100%. So, yes. You know, you were saying,
what's that?
You were saying I cut you off accidentally.
So my internet's down, so I'm tethering off my phone. So this might be garbled, but I'm hanging in there. So when you tie together how relationships, if you could create something somewhat memorable in your interaction with that person, and that's where storytelling really comes in, they can remember that, but they can't remember facts and figures. If you can have some kind of connection with that person where they're going to remember who you are, you do a LinkedIn connection, whether you sell something to them or not, it's amazing how they can come back into your life at some point and you can help each other. So when you had made the comment about, hey, you know, we can't help you moving on, I'm a little bit reticent to teach that to reps because you got to keep the end in mind. I mean, you're early in your career, but once you're around a while, you start to see some people over and over again. And I'm just wondering what you have to say about that as far as, you know, another way to look at it when you just do discovery as opposed to not caring, it could be that you really kind of want to get to know that person in the few minutes you have together and you want to make it memorable. And everything's on the table. And so you're not even worried about selling. You're actually more concerned about establishing a relationship with that person that potentially could last a lifetime. And when they sense that, that's my experience, is they're more willing to talk with you because this goes beyond the jobs that you're both in right now today.
Right. So I'll actually say one very simple thing from that. Can't tell you how many times I've actually ended up building better relationships with people that I know were not a fit for what we had to offer because I told them we're not a fit. Many times they would say something along the lines of, yeah, I appreciate you telling me. It doesn't seem like we're a fit. I get that. And I appreciate you being upfront. Now that we're talking, I have somebody else that might be a better fit. Why don't I make an introduction for you guys? And that actually made my relationship with the first person a lot better because we kept communicating moving forward to the extent that our product changed or to the extent that he or she thought there were other people that might have benefited also. So I find that when it comes to quote unquote rapport building, which of course I have my opinion on rapport building. It's important to be well respected when you're speaking with a prospect. I find the more upfront I am with them, the more they are drawn to want to speak with me further one way or another. So that's how I think about it. And I think it does not sacrifice the relationship in that way based on my experience. So that would be my response. Now, of course, it's also dependent on what you're selling. right? Some of us might, if you're selling software and it's more transactional, you do not need the relationship with that person after you have sold them. That's different for some of us who are actually keeping that relationship based on what we're selling after we have closed them also. So it really depends on what you're selling and what company you're working at.
So it's not just peppering them with a bunch of questions and getting respect just through that. There's other things that you do in order to create some kind of connection with that person.
100%. I think in the beginning, based on what Andrew, what you mentioned, I'm providing insight to them as early as I possibly can also. This way I want to establish credibility as soon as I possibly can and communicate to my prospect that I actually know their business, or I know their business well enough based on the persona that I speak to. And so if I can share what I'm hearing from other personas that are in their space, then they can immediately begin to start trusting me because they see that I know what I'm talking about, and they see that I know the lingo, and they see that I have a pretty good idea of their business. I never spoke to them, that individual, before, so they may think about things a little bit differently than some of the other personas that I currently work with. But they, once they get a sense that I understand their industry at a level where I'm dangerous enough to have a productive conversation, then they'll start trusting me and start breaking down the walls. And then I can ask them more direct questions and raise more insights to them so that we can continue building a better rapport over time or over a sales cycle. So that's how I think about it.
So you're really earning their respect and the right to
Correct.
Ask those questions.
Correct.
Yeah.
I want to earn their respect first.
Yep.
Now, you can ask good questions to everybody. If you ask a really good question, you can also ask a really good question that shows you know what you're talking about, and that also earns their respect. Earning their respect doesn't mean I'm just telling. I can also ask a really good question that simultaneously indicates that I know what I'm talking about, and they'll respect me that way too. They just don't, I think for any of us, any prospect won't, they'll have less respect for any salesperson that the prospect feels doesn't know what they're talking about. So I think we can all, if we were being sold to, we would feel that way also. So we just want, knowing what we are talking about is fundamental to being a good salesperson. If I had only two choices, knowing what questions to ask or knowing what I'm talking about in terms of their industry, I probably want to know what I'm talking about in terms of their industry first, because once I feel comfortable doing that, then the questions can be a lot more natural.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Anybody else?
I have a quick question, and I'm sorry, I was a little bit late from another call, so I'm sorry if you covered this. I'm a BDR, relatively new in the space, and something I'm struggling with a lot is on my cold calls, like actually getting to the questions that will get them to really talk about what's going on instead of just getting the surface level deflections. And maybe it's too general, but do you have any advice for figuring out how to ask those questions and getting comfortable with those questions to really actually get the conversation going about the bigger issue at hand instead of just kind of what's on the surface?
Right. So it's so on a cold call, right? A couple things. So, and Tommy, since this is definitely, I would assume, more an area of specialty for you than it is necessarily for me. I could be wrong. Correct me if that's the case. But I would say with cold calling, I'm slightly more delicate on a cold call because it's the whole call is completely unexpected. And so I'm actually purposefully not looking to ask anything that is too direct. It's kind of like if I was having a scheduled call with you, Sydney, you, the prospect, are in the mindset to have a conversation with me for 30 minutes. So you're a lot more calm for having a conversation. But if I called you out of the blue, you're not expecting that conversation. And so you wouldn't react as well to a very heavy question that I might ask, that I might normally ask on a scheduled call. You would react better on a scheduled call than you would on a cold call if I asked that same question, those two types of calls. So I'm kind of a little bit less direct on a, well, not less direct. I'm less poignant and my questions are lighter. That doesn't mean they're not open-ended. I'll ask more open-ended questions that are lighter just to get you talking and then to get you to a place where you're saying to yourself, well, I don't know if this is a fit for me, but what Charles is saying is catered to me, and Charles seems to know what he's talking about. And yeah, I'll have a conversation with him. That's pretty much all I want on the cold call. I'm not looking to do any heavy discovery questions. But let me throw the question back at you, Sydney. Is there a question that you like are hoping to ask them on a cold call that you feel you can't? And like, what question comes to mind as an example that you're hoping to ask them?
I wish I had something more specific. I think it's just the general feedback I'm getting like from my coworkers and managers about my cold calls when I ask for feedback. Because it's like, if I get somebody on the phone for a while, it's like a few minutes in before we get to like the main question that really gets them talking and really gets their interest.
What's the main question that really gets their interest?
I think right now, one of the big things we're asking is if the people we're calling are focused more on like NRR, net revenue retention, versus generating new business, like what's a bigger focus for them right now. And that usually gets like, oh, like it's interesting you ask. I guess I haven't found a way to ask it right out of the gate and get them to really talk to me, but maybe it's just my tone. Maybe it's the confidence in the delivery of the question.
Mm-hmm. What's the first question that you ask them on a cold call, aside from, you know, you open it up. Yeah. And I say, yeah, what's going on? Like, what's the first question you typically ask them?
It usually starts with them asking where I'm calling from, because we don't really have any name recognition. So I usually like do just a quick overview of like, we're out here to like solve these issues in the market. And then I'm curious when I think the main one we're asking now is when you're looking to get an accurate picture of your pipeline rep performance, where are you going to for that?
Okay. And what was that question you said earlier that you like? Can you repeat that question? The better question?
Is your team more focused on NRR, or sometimes I'll say net revenue retention, or generating new business right now? And
is that, why do you ask that question? Because you're helping them with what?
Because we're helping them with both. So the tool that I'm selling, it goes across all the way from the top of funnel all the way to churn in terms of its forecasting insights, which is the thing that differentiates us from anything else on the market. And so the idea is to help you get the kinds of customers that will eventually turn into good customers that won't churn. So it's like all the way through the cycle, instead of just, here's your bit of churn insights, here's your new customer insights, it kind of unites everything.
So you're helping with both of those?
Yes. But okay. Like in one place. So that's what we're trying to get at, but it's been kind of difficult because that's like our main differentiator.
Okay. So do you mind, trying to ask that question as your first question after I say it's okay to pick up? After I say it's okay to talk on a cold call, we'll just play it out and see how it goes. I have an idea of how to do it. You can do it better than me, because you know how the language. I can make an attempt, which I will, but I'd like to see you do it first, and then we can take it from there, and we'll start it with a ring ring. Is that cool?
Sure.
Okay. Ring ring. Hello?
Hi, this is Sydney calling from Falcon. How are you?
Good. What's going on?
Glad to hear it. Listen, I know there's no great time to receive a cold call, but if you have just a moment, can I let you know why I'm reaching out?
Sure. What's up?
Yeah, so I'm calling from Falcon. We are focused on pipeline visibility and rep performance in the market right now. And with all the changes going on this year, just wanted to ask if your team is more focused on retaining business or expanding to new business in the coming few quarters.
Okay, let's just stop there. So that's something you said you don't do?
Sometimes. Usually they start out with a, wait, what is Falcon? Where are you calling from? Who are you? And then I try and explain that. And then I feel like that's when I get stuck in talking about like the pipeline stuff.
Oh, you're saying they'll like push back and say, what's Falcon? And then they like steer the conversation away.
Yeah. And so I'm trying to figure out, because then we usually go down another road and it takes me a while to bring it back to like the meat of why I'm actually calling.
I see. So you can just, first of all, I loved that fact. I loved how it sounded, like you asked that question and that was your first question. I thought the delivery was great. If you're getting pushback on calling from Falcon, you can get rid of that. And Tom, your feedback here is also welcome. And say, hey, Sydney, I know I caught you out of the blue here. The reason why I'm calling is my team works with companies to help them with either net retention revenue or generating new business. And I was just curious to what extent, I was just curious which one of those areas you guys are focused on, just to determine if we can help you or not. Like, I don't have to say Falcon. Because then if they say Falcon, they'll be like, well, what's Falcon? You know what I mean? So I could just say, my team's helping companies do this. And I was curious where you're focused. They might say, who are you with? And then I could say, oh, I'm with Falcon.
Okay.
So that's something you can do. Sense. Tom, you have any feedback?
My feedback was about the same. I actually liked the tone. That I didn't have that idea about leaving off the company name, but I actually do like that. They might ask you and then you can give them the answer. I guess my question is, I'd have to give this more thought, but if you can help them in both directions, I'm wondering if, because I guess your path is, if I say I'm more focused on NRR, great, here's how we help, or you might ask me another question or two, and then you have an angle. If I say I'm more focused on new business, then you probably have an angle there. I wonder if there's a question that opens up whether I'm focused on both of those. Because it almost doesn't matter, right? If I do both those, it seems like you do both. So I don't know. I'm trying to kind of wrap my head around it. I'm struggling to think of a better question off the top of my head, but that is kind of where I don't know if that resonates with either of you two, or maybe I'm just
It resonates. Can I try being you, Sydney? I'm not going to do as well of a job, but you'll be the prospect and we'll see how I do. Is that okay?
This is great, by the way, Charles. We don't usually do role plays in like the Q&A, but this is great.
Cool.
Yeah, sorry to derail it, but I really
it's okay. This helps everybody out, right? This helps me out. It gets me out of my comfort zone. So I say, hey, Sydney.
Hello.
Hi, Sydney. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Hey, Sydney. I know I'm catching you completely off guard here. This is Charles Mulbauer at Falcon Calling. Is it right if I tell you why I'm calling real quick?
Sorry. Where are you calling from?
Yeah, I'm calling from Falcon. The reason why I'm calling is because the teams that we're working with, they are either prioritizing net revenue retention or they're generating new business, and we're helping them out with either one of them, depending on what their priority is. And I was curious to what extent either of those are priorities for your team today. Okay, so maybe that wasn't as great, but I just want to get you to see where I'm going. Like you said, Where are you calling from? I'm calling from Falcon, but I'm not pressured, right? I'm like, yeah, I'm calling from Falcon. The teams that I work with, I'm getting right into it. The teams that I work with, they either are looking to prioritize net revenue retention or generating new business. And we're helping out with both of those things, depending on what's important to them. The reason why I called you, I was just curious to what extent either of those are priorities for your organization today. Now you can change it, but I'm not I took the pressure off me. You're like, what's Falcon? I don't want to be like, well, Falcon is this and this and this. I don't want to say what right. So I avoid saying what we are. I just tell them what we do. Prospects don't care what you are. They care what you do and how you can help. If that's interesting, then they'll be like, oh, so you're a this, you're a that. Yes. Oh, get rid of we are a. No one cares. Just get right to this is what we, I'm calling from Falcon. Teams work with us in order to do this. Oh, that makes sense.
And not only just to butt in.
That might help you.
Not only not what we are, and then what we do, it's actually what you're saying there, Charles, is who we help and how we help them. So it's not even we. You say, our teams, but it's really the meat of the sentence is focused on the impact that you're providing or the problem that you're solving. So I'm
correct.
I wrote that down. I love that.
Get rid of the we are a. That's like you, Sydney, asking, Charles, where are you calling from? I'm like, oh, I'm calling from New York. I'm a human being living in Manhattan, right? Don't say we are a. Get rid of that sentence. Get right to the reason. Yeah, I'm calling from Falcon. The reason why I called you, or I'm calling you because the teams that we're working with in your space happen to be prioritizing one of these two things, and we're helping them out in one of those two ways. You're probably going to have a lot of questions. Curious to what extent either of those two things are things that you guys talk about internally. Done.
That's awesome. And I like the curious to what extent instead of which one of these, because that's more open-ended. That's what I was running into. I'm like,
yes, to what extent?
So what?
Yeah. Use to what extent all day.
What extent?
All day, all night. To what extent? I talk to my family that way. They're like, stop. It's annoying.
I think getting right to it, and just kind of acknowledging where you're calling from and getting right into the meat of it really works for probably a lot of us who aren't at massive powerhouse brand name companies. You know, if you work at a Gong or a Salesforce, you obviously can say I work at Gong, Salesforce, et cetera. But for some of the smaller fish out there in the pond, it's I can see 100% the value of just stating where you're from and what.
Yeah, exactly. And Joel and Sydney, I don't know if you guys feel this way. When I start saying on the phone, we are a, I don't feel good. I'm like, ugh. It's I'm not interested in, if I'm not interested in saying what I'm saying, they're not. So I want to feel good and be interested in what I'm saying. So that might be helpful, Sydney. And the fact that you can, or at least have a better idea of how to ask that first question off the gate, then you'll stop hearing the criticism from your colleagues, and you'll show them who's boss.
That's awesome. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Sure. Anyone else want to hit me up? Somebody's got their hand up. David.
Yeah, we got a little cue. So we'll go Prince next here.
Yeah.
David, you're next.
So I'm Prince. Nice to meet you, Charles.
Pleasure.
See, I was just checking out your LinkedIn. So I know you talked to a lot of sales team. So I was just curious, like in the last 90 days, like what feedback are you getting? Like, you know, speaking to sales team that you think that they're missing with Discovery, especially like with all the changes in the market, like the feedback that you just gave Sydney, like about like, and what Joel said, because when you're working with a small company, nobody cares about, the name. They want to know like how you help. So I'm just curious, like what feedback have you gotten like in the last 90 days that you think that a lot of sales rep are missing?
Sure. I'd say the number one thing that comes to mind is they don't look for trouble. It depends what kind of AEs I'm speaking with, right? But I find that many AEs are afraid to hear bad news and don't want to bring up any potential bad news that can derail a potential conversation that the AE actually wants to have. So, for example, let's say, Prince, you're my prospect, and we have a pretty good conversation, scheduled conversation, discovery conversation. And you say, Charles, this is actually really interesting. I actually wouldn't mind, seeing a demo. And then I say, cool, Prince, who else? Is there anyone else on your team that you think might be left out or actually really cares about this conversation to want to talk on, to want to see what we have to offer? And whatever you say, yes, no, cool. All right, cool. Awesome, Prince. And by the way, I'm going to like bring up trouble as early as I possibly can, right? Depending on where I am in the cycle and depending on what we're talking about. So I might say, and by the way, Prince, I know the question might be slightly premature. I don't know what your experience is, but given the current economy that we're in today, I've been experiencing that those people who actually want to work with us, they typically have to bring it to their CFO, and their CFOs really just care about one of two things, either mitigating risk or saving on cost. And I was curious to what extent that's actually affected your decision-making and to the extent that your CFO has or has to be involved in a conversation, should you end up wanting to work together. I thought it was worth asking. Right, so you might say, well, Charles, I wouldn't do it there. I would do it after a good demo. That's fine. But I know that could come up, and I know they are going to be afraid to bring that up, so I'm just going to bring it up. I don't really care. Like, I know that, and I'm sharing my experience, being like transparent with my sale. Or I might say, Sydney, by the way, it seems like the team sees value. How do you guys do this? We have to bring it to procurement. Great. Sydney, I might be coming across slightly paranoid here, but given my experience at my company these days, procurement doesn't seem what it used to be. It used to be kind of like just approving deals. Now they're pushing away deals. And I was curious, what you think we have to worry about, if anything at all, for this not to work out. So I'm bringing up the trouble, and people are afraid to do that. Mm-hmm. CFOs, procurement. If they say, I don't want Bob to be part of our conversations. We'll just, we'll make the decision from here. Great. Or we'll, he doesn't have to see it to make the decision. I might say, great. I might say, what hesitations do you think Bob would have if you think that there's no value here, or if you think the price is too expensive, you're welcome to tell me now. I'm just going to bring up trouble as much as I possibly can. Sorry, I'll stop there.
No, you're good, Charles. So I was saying, so basically you're being proactive and you're beating them to the punch of bringing up any problems, like you said, that you've been seeing in the last 90 days, or like you said, like,
Prince, you've been around the block. So talk like you've been around the block.
Okay.
I've been around the block. I've been working at my company. I don't care if I'm working at my company 6 months. I speak to people like this every day. I see what's going on in the economy. I see what's happening in the industry. If you see value, I'm going to bring up the conversation. I'm going to start looking for trouble. If you don't see value, then there's nothing to talk about. But yeah, I'm going to beat it to the punch. There's no question.
Okay. No, I love that. No, I appreciate that, Charles.
So look for trouble. If you don't find trouble, that means your discovery is no good. There's always trouble.
Hmm.
If you don't know of trouble, that means you're not doing good discovery. I might say, Prince, it sounds like you guys are interested and you find value. I guess if you had to think about one thing, Prince, that you think might stop us from moving forward, what comes up for you?
The cost.
Okay, whatever it is, I want to bring it up. I'm bringing it up before you are, because if I didn't bring it up, you might just not tell me. You might just ghost me. Helpful?
Yeah, that's really helpful. I like that.
Good. Look for trouble.
The amount of times I just gotta butt in here, Charles. The amount of times that I've done not what Charles just said in my sales career, it would fill up a whole room. Like it, you know, you feel it in your gut and you're too afraid to ask it, or you don't want to rock the boat, and then you get ghosted or you get strung along. I actually just made this mistake and lost a deal on Monday because of it. Because I sensed something was wrong. I wasn't at the right level of power. I trusted my champion too much. Then I ended up losing the deal. And so I should have just called it out. It's kind of like if you're on a date with someone and let's say you have a very strong religious belief, political belief, where you want to live, you want kids, you don't want kids. You'd rather know that maybe not in the first 10 minutes, but you'd want to know that earlier rather than you're about to get married.
That is a great example.
Wait, you want to live in Beijing? I thought we were living in Chicago. You know,
hey, like, Tom, I love that analogy.
That's a great analogy, Tom.
Yeah, yeah,
you got it. Great analogy.
It's just true, man. It's just true.
And you can use the other way. And these are what I talked about earlier about humbling disclaimers. All of these things that we're talking about can be incorporated in a humbling disclaimer. Like I might say, Prince, if you're my prospect, hey, Prince, you know, I'm a little hesitant to ask this. I was brought up as a young man to always make sure that I don't see red flags. And I see to make sure I catch all the red flags before I decide to marry somebody. So should we decide to actually marry one another and actually work together? I was curious what red flags you think might come up that might prevent us from working forward. It's okay if, you know, you have some, right? So that's a great, you know, I just made up that humbling disclaimer. You know, Sydney's probably like, there's no freaking way I would say that, but like, it doesn't matter. Just come up with your own. It's very disarming. It's very disarming.
Man, this advice is gold, Charles, and perfect analogy, Tom. I really appreciate it. This really helps.
Oh, thank you, Tom. I wouldn't be here without Tom, so thank you. Anyone else want to fire away?
I've been on enough bad dates to give that analogy. David, you're up.
Yeah, Tom, I'm with you on the bad dates, man. Way too many, way too many. Yeah. Charles, thank you for taking the time to join us. You are sure. The heart of discovery. I look at LinkedIn all the time and I'm taking your questions and posting them in my Evernote for future reference. So I've mostly taken inbound calls or people who have reached out to me who have said, hey, we want to talk about JustWorks, but I don't have a lot of experience with SDA meetings. So how should I approach an outbound meeting compared to an inbound meeting?
What is an SDA meeting?
Oh, from what I'm called, sales development.
Oh, okay. I got you. Make sure. So your question is, how would you approach outbound differently than inbound?
Yes.
It's a good question. So the first thing that comes to mind is, let's just state the obvious. On an inbound call, on any inbound conversation, we all immediately have the right to ask, out of curiosity, David, what compelled you to want to reach out to us? Okay, that's easy. Okay. On an outbound conversation, that's not as easy. And not only is it not as easy, the probability of you getting a good response is a lot lower because it's an outbound conversation. With that said, you can slip in that question. It's debated, right? I personally don't really ask that question on an outbound conversation. I'm not against it. I personally don't use it because I find that if they want to tell me why they took the call, it'll come across in the conversation if we're having a good conversation, right? But if you, David, are my prospect and we're having a good conversation, I say, hey, we have a half hour, blah, blah, blah. This is what I had in mind for the call. Does that work for you? Did you want to get anything out of the call today that I missed? No, blah, blah, blah. I might slip it in there and say, cool. And by the way, David, I speak with, screen's getting lighter. And by the way, David, just before we kick off the conversation here, it's different for everyone that I talk to. And I was just curious if there was something specific in my outreach that you thought was somewhat compelling as to the reason why you wanted to talk today. If not, that's okay, but I thought I would ask. Right. So it's a much softer version of me asking that question, but that's where I would slip it in. There are a number of ways to slip it. I might say, cool, David, by the way, before we kick off the conversation, usually people I'm speaking to are in like one of two camps. They're either like in the camp of saying, hey, Charles, I don't know what I don't know really, and I'm just looking to learn more. Or in their camp, or in the second camp where they're saying, no, we actually really wanted to speak with JustWorks because there are a couple of things internally that we're dealing with that we were hoping we can solve. And I was curious to what extent, I was curious which camp you feel you're in before we kick off the conversation. Ray can do that too. You could do the two camps. So that's number one. Like if I decided to slip in that question. They might say, I don't know what I don't know. Now, whether I ask that question or not, I'm doing an upfront contract, right? And then I'm getting into immediately why I called, right? So David, just to give you some context, the reason why we even bother reaching out to you in the first place is because we saw you just, you're this type of company in this space. We happen to be working with a lot of other clients that are in the same space who want to be better. And pardon me, David, if I'm botching this, who want to see what better opportunities there could be within HR or payroll. Okay, I might be messing that up. And so I thought it might be worth a conversation to the extent that we may or may not be a fit to work together. With that said, would love to learn more about blank. Okay, so then I'm in a conversation. So that's how I would think about the inbound versus the outbound. But again, the inbound, like, why are we on the call? And I could totally skip an upfront contract on an inbound call, by the way, like an inbound conversation. If I say, what compelled you to reach out? Oh, this, and this. And then I'd be like, cool, can I ask you a couple of really direct questions about that before we determine where they want to go from there? Yeah, I could totally skip the upfront contract should I decide that's the case. So that's how I think about those two. Does that answer your question or not really?
Yeah, no, it does. What was the first reason? No, the second thing was, okay, are you reaching out because you're just interested in learning more?
Oh, people that I speak to usually fall in like one of two camps.
Yeah, what was the first one before that?
Let's say I'm you, I'm David. And I say, let's say I'm the AE. And I say, and so David, they fall in one of two camps. Camp number one is they say, you know what, Charles, we don't know, we don't know. What you guys do seems interesting. We don't really know if we need you. We don't really know if we're a fit, but we want to have the time to have this conversation nonetheless. And then David, I speak with people in the second camp where they're like, no, we have a fairly good idea of JustWorks and we're looking to solve something specific, which is what we wanted to talk to you about. Just curious which camp you're in before we start the conversation. You can do it that way also.
Yes, I'm just writing down some notes.
No problem. Yeah. But the two camp formula is just a great thing to gauge priority. So let's say I'm Joel, right? And I'm having a good conversation with my prospect, but they're like, yeah, we have these problems and we want to fix them, right? I mean, like, cool, Joel, I appreciate you sharing these issues with me. Usually when I speak to people who have similar challenges, they fall into one of two camps. They say, you know what, Charles? These are issues that we need to solve that are part of our organizational priorities, and we should have solved for them 6 months ago. That's camp number one. Or camp number two is, listen, these are problems, Charles, but to be honest, if we don't fix them in the next 12 months, we'll be just fine. Curious how you think about it, right? So you can gauge priority also mid-conversation so that you don't waste time either.
Got it. Thank you. Wait, what was the thing before the two camps? There was another suggestion that you.
Oh, it was. Yeah, David, before we kick off the conversation here, it's different for everybody that I talked to. I was curious what was compelling about you wanting to speak with us today, if anything at all, based on our outreach, thought I would ask. It's a lot of like, if I feel very awkward asking a very direct question, why did you take the call today? Right. I'm going to cushion it a lot so that. And you notice in the beginning of the question, I say it's different for everyone that I talk to, which is the reason for my question. Prospects love reasons for questions. So if you're going to provide a reason for your question, it's best to provide the reason either before the question or immediately after the question, as long as it's before the prospect actually answers it.
Yes, I could just say before I start the conversation, I know it's different for every team that I speak with. What was the compelling reason for taking the call?
If any at all. And awesome. I cushion it at the end, if any at all.
Love that. Thank you, Charles.
Of course. Anyone else? It's now or never.
See
what do they say? What do they say at weddings? What do they say?
My hand up here, Charles.
Oh, sorry.
Hey, Charles, yeah, I started out talking about my background and whatnot. You might ask, what the hell are you doing here, right? But I'm first employee for a company that's been in business a while, but it's really kicking it off in the United States. So I'm the first employee in the United States, and I need to build something up. So I'm back to prospecting and doing all kinds of stuff. And I decided just to take a refresh and, you know, get up to speed on what the younger set is doing. So I really appreciate this. This is gold for sure.
Awesome.
Question I have, though, about one thing I'm a firm believer in is that you don't always get to talk to the decision maker. I mean, I've always taught people get to that decision. You don't always get to them.
Correct.
I've won $1 million deals where I get a signature for somebody I've never met.
Right.
Because I got champions sometimes working two layers up to get to that signature.
Okay.
Now, grooming the champion is key. Developing that relationship, teaching them how to tell stories and sell internally for you is imperative.
Okay.
The other thing they do is they give you the scoop, the G2, on what's going on the ground there. So the whole organizational chart, the politics, you start to get to know them and they really open up.
Okay.
What do you do with your discovery? It is important that you're running and gunning and qualifying deals.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, if you really want in, so this is probably for larger accounts or big ticket items, but if you want to groom that champion, do you have any advice or do you want to talk? Can you talk at all about that?
Grooming my champion. So First, I won't even know if the person can't give me the direct, a very clear indication as to exactly how decisions are made, exactly the process, then they're not even a potential champion.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. So I want to just get that indication. If they're not challenging me, if they're not talking about their organization as a whole, then I'm like, okay, it's probably not a champion. Once I've determined that the person is a potential champion, the main two, I'm going to do three things, right? The number one thing is I would ask them, Bruce, can you help me understand how you would potentially sell this to the team and what the value you think could be for the organization? That'd be great for me to understand. Okay, so I want to know how they're going to sell it. The second thing is I want to know what pushback they would honestly expect from their team and what they feel might stop us from working together. And who on their team might stop us from working together also, right? That's the second thing I'd want to ask them. Now, if they tell me, then I have the opportunity to fix it with him or her, right? I have the opportunity to fix it with that champion if they're honest with me and they tell me what might derail if I feel it's in my control. Now, if that's going well and they say, you just can't speak to the decision maker, I will print, this applies to you, I will look for trouble, whether it's going to help me or not. And I'll say, cool, Bruce, I, by the way, one thing in my role at XYZ Corporation is I always respect my potential buyer's process. At the same time, and you're welcome to disagree with me, I'm still in role play, and you're welcome to kind of push back on me here. In my experience at my company, you can call me paranoid. I'd say I almost never, very rarely have actually moved an opportunity forward with someone without the decision maker, because things end up getting lost in translation usually, and they think they're something that we're not. And that's something that I might be slightly concerned about. Can help me, I guess, what do you think? Do you think, what was the question I wanted to ask? Oh, that's something I might be concerned about. Is that something you feel like I should be concerned about? It's just my experience here. Right. So I'm just going to kind of look for trouble a little bit on that end. If they don't want me speaking to the decision maker, I'll just plainly say it's happened maybe once that we've actually ended up working together with somebody without the decision maker involved. Curious to what extent you feel I should be concerned. Something along those lines. You can change the wording. You can change how you would ask it, but I'd be looking for trouble there. So those are the three things that I normally do.
So when I'm doing discovery with somebody initially, we're really just trying to get the meeting, right? So we've got the meeting. It looks like I've asked enough questions. I feel comfortable bringing in somebody from the technical person from our side. And we have that call. We do that demo. It's after that demo, if it looks really good, that's when I reach out to that person and I try to get a one-on-one call with them. And that's when, for me, the discovery really starts then, right? Where it looks like there's a real deal here. And that's why I really want to dig in and understand what's going on in the organization.
Exactly.
at that point, they're open to being friends, doing the LinkedIn connection, and the whole thing just starts to open up. But you just don't move on and say, oh, I got this deal in the bag. You start forecasting it. That's when the work really begins, where you really establish yourself in that account. Do you agree with that?
I agree with that. Yes. What feedback they had from the conversation, as well as hesitations they might have about speaking again, because they can always back out anytime.
Yep. True. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Bruce. Anybody else with the time that we have left? I think we have six minutes left.
5 minutes. What do we got?
I mean, I could ask a quick question. I'm actually a BDR, so discovery is kind of what I leave to my AEs more than anything. Although, like, I just got off a call and, you know, prodding and asking him questions when he wasn't interested at first to uncover, you know, if there was a deeper problem, was certainly a focus. So I guess, you know, maybe kind of falling on a little bit onto Sydney's kind of question was like, how much would you put into like thinking about discovery at that first, you know, in that intro call or in that cold call that I'm making? Like
a cold, we're talking about a cold call, not an intro call, right?
Sorry. Yeah. A cold call. Flat.
It'll be very clear.
Okay. Yes. Thank you.
What's more important on the, okay. What's less important, Ian, on the cold call is my questions. What's more important is me succinctly, it's a hard word, me succinctly telling the prospect why I called and the value that, or not the value, and the problems that our clients have asked us to solve for, and to what extent is that an interesting conversation? That's all I want to know. I just want them, based on what Sydney was doing in the beginning, when I'm looking on a cold call in the beginning, is I'm looking to bite that for them to bite on something interesting as early as possible, okay? And the way most people have a higher probability on biting on a problem that you've shared with them, that they've thought about, that they feel is actually relevant enough to potentially have a discussion about. And if they bite on a problem, I'm in the door and now we can talk. And I could say, Ian, do you think it might be, I know I caught you on a cold call. Do you think this might be worth, do you think this is a topic of discussion that might be worth having on a scheduled call instead of a call out of the blue? You think that would be a bad idea? Right? That's all I'm looking for. I'm not looking for a heavy discovery on cold calls. Absolutely not. I'm just not.
Sure.
I might say, right? Let's say I go within the, like a first killer question like Sydney, and you say, yeah, that's actually something that we're thinking about a lot. I might say, oh, can I ask what you guys are doing right now to fix that? I know I caught you out of the blue, and you know, whatever comes to mind is helpful, right? If they say, oh, we're doing this or that, you know, I don't know where the conversation is going to go, right? Because I can't control what they're going to say, but I can always ask. You're probably, Ian, I know I caught you off guard, and naturally, you're probably going to have a lot of questions for what we do, and you're probably pretty skeptical because you never heard of my company before. Do you think this is a topic of a conversation that might be worth discussing to see whether or not we can help you on another call? And if we can't, no big deal. Right? I'm coming across as disarming the entire time, but I want you to bite on a problem as much as I can. Yeah, if a prospect says to me, yeah, we're thinking about that, I'm in the conversation. I could ask whatever I want. Oh, what can you tell me a little bit more about that? I'm in the conversation. It's the opening the door that's the hardest part. But once I'm in the room, say, can you tell me a little bit more about that? What tools do you guys use? Oh, I got it. And then I turn it around. You're probably gonna have a lot of questions for me because I caught you out of the blue. You think it might be worth having a conversation around it on another call? They might be like, yeah, but let me ask you a couple questions. Be like, sure.
That's helpful. You know? So it's a distinction between just like trying to understand if that's a problem and how they're looking at it now versus going into that deeper discovery.
Yes. Save the deep discovery for the scheduled call. That's what it's there for.
Yeah. I was on a call just now where they pretty much were not interested, but they were still giving me time. And then I felt like compelled to dig deeper because I knew I wasn't going to get a meeting from them almost completely unlikely, but I still had a chance because they were still on the call. And that's where maybe I thought doing a little bit more digging.
That's pretty much what Bruce just said. Bruce, I'm going to ruin the quote, but like you knew you were dead So now I can ask any question I want.
Right.
Yeah. Right. So that's the beauty about that. So that's kind of, now we're going to go full circle. Act like, you know, act like you lost already. I know people, like, you'll hear people, oh no, assume you win. You will. You won the sale. I think what that really means is just like, just chill, whether you win or lose. Like, okay, whatever happened, happened. Like, and then it can ask any question I want. So that's how I think about it. Very nice meeting everybody on this short hour, which flew by. So you're all welcome to hit me up on LinkedIn. And if you want to see this type of coaching videos I've done, sorry, sessions I've done, discoverycoach.io, or just hit me up on LinkedIn and leave me a funny voice note.
Charles, you are the man. Thank you for doing this. I took a lot of notes myself that I'm going to use in my sales calls the rest of this week. So thank you. Thanks, everyone, for joining. Yeah, definitely hit Charles up and follow him on LinkedIn.
Bye, everybody. Thank you, Tom.
All right. See you guys.
Thanks very much.